This week, before we get started, a listener, a very special listener, has just recently had his 19th birthday. So I wanted to give a shout out to Matthew. Matthew, happy birthday. And let your parents know who you want me to talk to. And I'll talk to them as soon as I can for the show. Take care, bud. Okay, so I always try to get more out of my interviews with players than just X's and O's. So this latest one is another one that I'm extremely proud of. We talked about being bougie times 1,000 in New York City, being a Rolling Stone in U.S. soccer, being outspoken and laughing through adversity. I've always been impressed by his play, but now I'm even more impressed with his passion. Plus, soccer success is a combination of who you know, lucky breaks, timing, and Byzantine rules in North America. But Kwame Awuwa cuts through it all. Let's get to the Hammer of Sparks podcast.
All right, sounds good.
All right, hello everyone, and welcome to the Hammer of Sparks podcast. Today I'm joined with my guest Kwame Awuwa, former Forge superstar and now bouncing all around a Rolling Stone. I'm gonna get him to tell us a little bit about where he is right now. So Kwame, tell us, where are you right now?
Hey guys, thank you for having me so much. I mean, I appreciate it. Always nice to speak to a big Forge fan such as yourself. I had a great 3 years there, as everyone knows. Right now, I'm currently in the DMV, playing for Loudoun United. DC United's affiliate team in the USL Championship. I was at St. Louis City last year. Yep. That didn't work out, and I ended up signing here, and I'm enjoying it so far. Right now, we are stationed... I mean, our facility is stationed in Leesburg, Virginia. I know a lot of people won't know where that is, but so far, so good. It's quiet. I'm enjoying it, and I've just been bouncing all around trying to get my trying to get comfortable and trying to get acclimated to where I'm living and stuff like that. But so far, so good.
You know, and talk to me about that a little bit, because I was, you know, been preparing for all this. After you left us in Forge, you went to Vancouver Whitecaps on a trial, right?
Yeah, I forgot about
that. We all thought, okay, this is it. Now we got to play in the big leagues, another Canadian player. And then that didn't work out. Then you were in St. Louis City, right? Mm-hmm. And they're just about to go up to the MLS. So we're like, okay, mm-hmm. So here he goes. Now he's going up to the MLS. Mm-hmm. And now you're with Loudoun, which is right mm-hmm. on the cusp of going up to DC United in the MLS. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that journey, because it doesn't sound like an easy journey, and it sounds like a lot of bouncing around.
Honestly, I left off such a high at Forge that I was like, you know what? Right now, like, I feel like my physical peak, like I had my best season with the CONCACAF, and then going to the final again for the third year in a row. And I played almost every game that there was available to play, except for two of them.
Right.
And one of them I was on the bench for. But other than that, like, I started, like, out of the 40 games we played in 5 months, I started like 38. I was like, hey. Yeah, I was like, oh, man, I was right. So when Vancouver came knocking, and it's funny because a lot of people don't know, Vancouver invited me to their preseason.
Right.
The day after I scored against Montagua in the tying goal in the 96th minute.
Right.
Yeah, I got back to my phone. My agent texted me. He said, yeah, this is a done deal. I was pumped about going to Vancouver. Great city, great place, great facility, great people. I had friends that were playing there already as well.
Right.
So when I got there, it was easy for me to blend in. A lot of guys that were on trial as well, good people. They welcomed me. I did really well. So that situation, basically, obviously, everybody knows the MLS has rules, roster rules.
Right.
And because I was turning 26, I was going over the threshold, so I'd have to be counted as a senior roster player. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have any more senior roster spots because some people were supposed to be leaving the team.
Right.
And that didn't come to fruition. So they were just like, the conversation that I had with Axel was a really good one. He's like, you are more than welcome to stay here and train with us with the first team. And like, we can sign you to the second team, but you'll mm-hmm. train with the first team most of the time. Or he's like, you can stay, train with us, and we'll pay for your housing, your lodging. Like, we'll give you, like, per diem and stuff like that until another opportunity comes up. Wow. And at that point, like, me and myself, I already had St. Louis, the interest of St. Louis, but but I already committed to Vancouver Whitecaps.
Right.
So I was like, all right, like, you know what? I already packed most of my stuff thinking I was going to stay in Vancouver.
Right.
Like that's how confident I was that I was like, yo, I'm signing him. And when I went there, like, it never felt like I didn't perform it. And that's what they said. They're like, as much as we want you to stay here, it's just like right now, we just don't have the space. He's like, there's no point of us bringing you to sit on the bench and like rot on the bench. He's like, you're too good of a player to do that. And we don't have the roster spot for you. So
this seems to be something that we hear a lot of from CPL players, and specifically the guys I've talked to from Forge. It's never been a question of the play on the field. It's always about some back end paperwork or, you know, fitting the pieces into the puzzle. How frustrating is that side of the game to you when you know you can play, but you got to fit that piece in and be the right place at the right time?
I mean, I feel like my career has always been, since I was in New York City FC, it was never a thing about like the ability. It was just, you just have to, as much as it is, a lot of you have to have luck as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't understand that some players are lucky. Some players you watch till this day, you're like, how's this guy playing here? But right. He just fell into the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Like, who knows if I would have got drafted to another team in the MLS, maybe I would have still been playing in MLS consistently, but I would have never learned everything that I've learned now, or would have accomplished everything that I accomplished now while playing at it. Like, what if I was playing at a last place team in MLS and I would have been miserable, but yeah, I would have been playing.
Right.
Right. At the end of the day, the competition was what was driving me. But I think that stuff that happened in New York City FC, me not playing and stuff like that, and them not having a second team for the young guys to get minutes,
right,
prepared me for something like this. I was like, you know what? Like, at that point, because I did have a plan B and because of like the high that I was coming off of, this was just only like it was a blessing in disguise, because the blemish was that people are going to be like, wow, he couldn't even make Vancouver Whitecaps. But then the blessing in disguise is like, okay, he didn't make Vancouver Whitecaps not because he wasn't good enough. But the other teams in the MLS will view it as, oh, he must not be good enough.
Right.
So that might have been the blemish, but it is what it is. You can't really, you got to focus on what you can control. And then I ended up going to St. Louis City SC and never looked back.
So I want to dive into two things there. So going back a step to when you were starting with New York City, like you're playing for a team that's under the City Group umbrella. You're in New York City, bright lights, big city. Like at that point, you're coming out of, you know, college at UConn and playing with Sigma, and you've been signed by this huge team. You must have thought, all right, I've arrived, right? Like I'm playing big MLS team. What was that like to hit that big city and to hit MLS like that?
I mean, it was amazing. I've gone to a New York City FC game because the year before Kyle got drafted to Orlando. And New York is 2 hours from UConn.
Right.
So I was able to go watch it. I was able to go catch one or two games whenever they played. But going there was one of the best experiences in my life. I always tell myself, I got to visit New York City once a year, every year, at least, minimum. So some of my closest friends are there. I developed a lot of close friendships there. Guys that have moved on to other teams. The assistant coach for DC United right now, I played with him at New York City FC.
Wow.
So just seeing him in the facilities, like we talked about the old times, this and that. But I was a young kid, 20, turning 21, getting drafted. And it was like bright lights. And I was like, you know what? Obviously, being from Toronto kind of helped me.
Right.
Yeah, because the city part, but New York is New York, man. And the city football group, the experiences that we got, like, we were like the bougie team of MLS, like how LAFC and LA Galaxy are. Like, we were like on the East Coast, we were the bougie team.
So talk to me about that a little bit. What is it like to be on the bougie team?
It's the benefits are great. I mean, I was able to adapt to it because obviously Toronto, the lifestyle,
right?
And then going to the school like UConn, such a prestigious sports school, you're used to winning. You're used to getting like the free Nike stuff, the commercials or all that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At that time, you couldn't get paid in college, but like just getting that attention.
Right.
Then going to New York, it was just that times 1,000. Like, even though I wasn't playing, I was still able to do like autograph sessions to earn like side money. Like, mm-hmm. you'd be able to get like appearance bonuses just because we were such a big club that like we just playing going to Yankee Stadium every weekend. Right. Like that's another thing. Getting to be in the same locker room that like guys like Derek Jeter and stuff were in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, all those fringe benefits, right?
Yeah, getting to meet I got to meet LL Cool J, like my coach, you know what I mean? My coach was Padriera, I played with Pirlo Davia, Jack Harrison, who's on Leeds now. So like you meet so many people and you're like, wow, like at that point, you're not trying to be a super fan, but looking back at it, you're like, yeah, this is amazing.
Yeah, like that's an experience that not a lot of young Canadian footballers are getting, right? So you can see that. Okay, so now jumping forward, you go to St. Louis City FC, and they're just on the cusp of joining MLS at the time that you got there. So it's like their last year being that step down. Yeah. You played a lot of games with them, right? And you guys did really well, making it pretty far in the playoffs and stuff like that. Were you guys like the finalists?
Yeah, we lost in the finals to Columbus Crew.
Right. So now how does that impact you getting that opportunity to play for a team and knowing you're on the cusp of going to Major League Soccer as the whole team? What did that feel like?
I mean, it was amazing. I mean, their project, they've done a really good job setting the facilities. Unbelievable. The stadium is unbelievable. They took care of the players. I mean, the people there are really, really great people. The players that were there, that like those are some of my close friends now too. We built like close relationships. St. Louis itself as a city is a big soccer city.
Yeah, it's known for being a big soccer city. In this country, right?
St. Louis University has the most national championships in NCAA history, and a lot of people don't know that they have 10. So just that in itself, and then they lost their soccer team for 2 years, I believe, before this one was rebuilt. So
they're probably starved for that soccer again, right?
Everybody was passionate. I mean, they have the St. Louis Blues and the Cardinals, but those like baseball, sometimes you're not gonna want to watch. I lived by the baseball stadium, so I went to a couple games.
Right.
And then the St. Louis Blues, who just came, they won the Stanley Cup in 2019, I believe. So it's not too far off. But other than that, like they don't have a basketball team.
Even though they had big, it's wide open for a major push in Major League Soccer, right?
Exactly. So the facilities is right. Everything was perfect. Like in the beginning, obviously it's a rough patch. Everybody's it's a brand new organization. You're trying to get everything organized. Like, but there's a couple of rough patches for me in soccer wise and like personal wise, I guess organizational wise, that kind of like teetered some relationships between either me or staff or me or whatever. It was nothing that was negative. It was just certain things that could have been handled better. I did play a lot of games, and a lot of people were asking me questions, especially at the end of the season when I wasn't being when I wasn't appearing in on the bench or anything like that. And
because early on, we're following you as sports fans. You know, we're following all our former players. Where are they now, kind of thing? And we could see that your appearances early on, you were getting so much game time. So we're like, okay, this is amazing. And then later on, as the season's going on, there's like little patches. And so not getting to see the games live and stuff like that, you're always left to wonder. So how was that wind up with?
I mean, it was definitely a difficult situation at first because I got thrown into the fire. Like I got there February, literally a year ago today.
Wow.
I got there literally a year ago today, February 20th. And they were already in preseason for a month. So everybody was able to get, and it's the whole, so like, let's say Forge is one style of football.
Right.
It's like the opposite style of football.
And now you're just getting thrown into it. Like,
and I'm just getting thrown into it. So everything I've ever, it's opposite style of, Every place that I've played in my whole career has been similar playing style. This was like a total left field. So I'm getting thrown into it, and I'm doing things that like have gotten me to where I am and why they brought me here. But I felt like they were like in the beginning, they were like, I felt forced to play how they wanted me to play, and it just wasn't coming natural. So I wasn't performing at my highest level when I first got there. Okay. So then I started coming off the bench. Couple conversations, and then I kind of just tried to play my way of soccer within their system. And like we went on a run, we went on like a 10-game unbeaten streak like throughout the summer and fall. Comes in some first team players from Europe, and then a couple guys get thrown to the bench because we're not signed to MLS deals, and it just goes from there. You know what I mean? So There's a lot of business that a lot of people don't know about it, but it is what it is. I mean, I obviously could have done better with my situation playing wise, but I for sure know, and anybody on in that organization can attest to it. I never missed a game. I never missed a training. I never disrespected anyone. And when I was playing, I tried my best all the time. So like that was the one thing that I acted like the best professional. The old me probably would have set shit on fire.
Right.
But going through all that stuff that I went through in New York and stuff like that, I was like, you know what? Let me just deal with it the same way. Because I'm like, I know I was going to get an opportunity after. I knew at probably around September, I knew I wasn't going to go back to St. Louis.
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to play out these games and then find out the next opportunity. And then God was on my side. Some guys were dropping like flies. And then I just kept playing consistently. We kept winning. And then the last three games of the season, I didn't dress. No, last two games of the season, I didn't dress.
Right, which was, for us, like, as following the game, it's tricky because you're like, he's playing all these games and they're doing so well. So you're just waiting to hear how you're doing in the finals, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, it was kind of, like, disappeared. But I do, that brings up an interesting point for me. The small circles that soccer is in North America, like, you playing in New York City and now being on the same field with your former teammate and your coach, like it is a small world, and blowing things up like you might have done in your younger years would have cost you these opportunities now, right? So it is a big learning process on the field, but professionally, business-wise, there's a lot of stuff to learn that I think Canadians haven't been exposed to, right?
Yeah, no, that's definitely a thing. I think just in America in general, there's just so many more opportunities. There's so many other teams. There's so many different leagues. Like there was the NASL, there's the UPSL, there's the MPSL, there's the USL, there's USL League 1, 2, there's the MLS. Like, there's so many opportunities for people to get any type of professional experience. But I think the one thing that has always stuck with me, and my mom told me this before I went to college, she's like, the same people that you meet on your way up are the same people that you're going to meet when you're on your way down. So if you're a total asshole, if people like you, like your name is worth anything, worth more than anything anybody can give to you. So she's like, if you're an asshole and suddenly shit hits the fan, the people that you are asshole to, they're not going to be there to catch you from falling. They're just going to watch you fall. Well, but if you were someone like, I never played like in the World Cup or whatever, but like I still have the same connections as someone that would probably played at in the MLS of 500 games. Like I know so many people that are close to me and would help me if I ever needed anything. You know what I mean? So I think it's just like a lot about networking and just being a good person. Like you can tell who's truly genuine. And now just sometimes things come full circle. Now look, he's assistant coach at DC, right? So he's like, there's someone he could trust. But I think that's another thing. North America, there's a lot of, it's more of a brotherhood.
Right. Why do you think that is such a brotherhood?
I think that's just the nature of North American sports, though. Like owners are brothers with other owners, and then people talk, and then you employ those who you can trust.
Right.
Even though it's a results business, their owners are still always going to get their money, right, regardless if they win or lose, because there's no relegation. They're not losing anything.
Right.
Whereas in Europe, some teams will have a guy with a little bit more of a bad attitude, but he gets the job done because the fans will be on their case.
Right. Because
if you lose and if you're not going to play the best players and you lose, your team gets relegated and you lose millions of dollars. There's always a lot more at stake. So it's a whole different ballgame.
It's interesting that you say that too. And I think one of the things I wanted to talk about earlier is, and listening to you talk about this, your time was split, like your soccer development time was split almost like between Sigma and UConn. And then once you got to the pros, you're like in New York and then you were in Hamilton getting all this experience. What is the biggest difference? One, you've already told me, there's just so much opportunity in the United States. But what are the other differences or even similarities between the play in Canada and the play in the United States in your experience? Because you've got a lot in both.
So I think I got killed on saying something in my podcast. Well, not killed, but Christian Jack, me and him spoke about it privately. He's like, instead of comparing the leagues, like compare, like talk about like how the Americans always fend for other Americans, and sometimes us Canadians fail to do that. And I have an experience, which I'll probably share when I retire, because right now I can't.
Okay.
I have an experience of a former Canadian international, big name, like basically talking down on me to other coaches. And it's like American coaches wouldn't do that to their to, let's say someone from, let's say the USL,
right,
who was a top player in the USL, was trying to go to the MLS. Their coach or a coach that played against them wouldn't go to a team in MLS and be like, oh, this kid's not good enough.
Right.
They'd be so pulling
right?
Pardon?
You think they'd more be pulling for a fellow American?
Americans, they pull for the other Americans. That's why you see a lot of kids in America getting overhyped and stuff like that. But like, right, you need that to get the eyes on it. America's a big marketing, it's a marketing pot, you know what I mean?
Right.
But Canada, I think we kind of lose sight of that. But another difference, I always tell people, so yeah, I wasn't comparing. I said the USL is a better league than CPL. You can't say that. It's just been around longer. Like, I'm not talking about Loudon compared to Forge.
Right.
Forge will probably most likely, our Forge team in 2021 will probably beat every USL team.
You think the top, yes, playing at your best, yeah, like Forge, you can handle it?
I think that Forge 2021 team could be a mid-table team in the MLS, at least, in Eastern Conference. I promise you. Like, if we had the same salary, but like budget and stuff like that.
And that's where it gets hard, right? Because it's not, again, it's not the skill of the players. It's all the other things on the side.
The other things that come with it. Mm-hmm. So, like, the fact that we were playing against those teams in CONCACAF, and those are the same teams that beat MLS teams.
Yep.
When they play against them. So,
those are names,
I mean,
right?
Yeah, it's not that. That's, I think people got confused. I was like, I wasn't saying everyone in MLS. If you play for Forge, yeah, that's a different story. Forge is probably better than a lot of teams in the USL. But if you combine everything, you average it out.
Yeah, and that's USL's the.
It's a better league. You can't.
And that's the hard thing, right? It's always hard to compare leagues because there's so much difference. There's so much variance between top and bottom, right?
Mm.
But all together speaking, when you have that many teams and that much talent and those many, you know, options and players, and
a lot bigger infrastructure, more money put into it, more, like, you know what I mean, more guarantees, more, it's more structure. Yeah, then
and just more years of existence too.
Yeah,
right?
That's all I was saying. People and everyone was confused. I'm like, yo, there's a reason why players like me, Daniel Crutzen, Marco Bustos, like, we didn't get MLS opportunities, or we had to go on trial to MLS teams. But guys from the USL, if they did what we did, like what we did in the CPL, if they did that in the USL, they would get deals right out of the USL. They wouldn't have to be a trial. They wouldn't have to be, yeah, you know what I mean? They'll get signed right away because it's just a more proven league.
Okay.
And that's all I was saying.
And I love that approach too, because again, Daniel was saying that something like that when I was talking to him on the show too, about it's a known commodity to them more than CPL is at this point, right? Obviously. So when they see somebody succeeding in USL, they're like, okay, that we understand what that level is. We still don't have a grasp on what CPL level is, number one. And then number two, it does come down sometimes to that, you know, the paperwork, the visas, the all these other ages and what that team. So there's a lot of other, MLS has that, you know, a lot of complicated things that go on behind the scenes, right?
So for me to go to MLS, like, I don't count as an international. So I could sign for any team in MLS, any American team in MLS.
Speak to me a little bit about that, because I think a lot of folks don't understand why that is. Why is it that you don't count as an international on an MLS team? if you can break that down for us.
It was, I was told in layman's terms, the simplest way I could tell you is that because I think it was because once they started bidding for the World Cup, something about the World Cup, and then 2017 was the first time where they considered Canadian academies. Like, if you graduated from a high performance academy in Canada, there's only a specific amount of academies that would count, and you signed your first professional deal in the MLS, then you wouldn't be considered as international. You'd be considered domestic. So that helped me with everything. It helps me right now. It helps. I still need a visa. Right. As a roster, I'm a roster spot, I don't count as international.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that worked out for me for sure. But like, yeah, that, like Daniel said, like they don't have a grasp of the level of CPL. So a lot of the reason why we got these opportunities was literally because of the way we performed it against Montreal, the way we performed against those teams in CONCACAF. It wasn't really because how we were playing in the CPL. Forge went to four finals in a row. So now people even – it's going to be even harder.
Right.
For people to be able to leave because they're going to be like, hey, this team wins every time.
Right. So now, again, if you're not following this league really closely, for people from afar, they're looking at this league and they're saying, well, there's one good team in it because they're always in the finals. So if you're coming from anywhere else, that's a big challenge for them to try and improve themselves, right? Whereas exactly. You guys can look back and say, hey, we played Toro or we played, you know, Motagua.
Montagua, yeah, played Olympia, all those guys. So like, we have that in our resume. So I think that's what helps us. But at the same time, a lot of people don't do their homework, right?
Yeah.
Like some people don't. You just go by word. You go by, like, let's say I trust you enough. I know that you have a good soccer mind and you bring a player to me. You're like, yo, this guy's really good. Like, trust me. Like, you have my backing on it. You're like, all right, you know what? We'll give him a try. We'll give him a one-year deal. You have nothing to lose. But because people don't want to actually put in the effort to actually go watch the person play.
Right.
Yeah,
And again, in this, like you were saying, with so many teams and so much, like that's the one thing about North America and specifically the United States, because there's so much range of teams and so many leagues and stuff like that, you're probably right. They're probably more willing to listen to a trusted advisor than have to go and plug through all the different leagues.
There's too many people to choose from. So if Landon Donovan pulls up to one of the coaches in the MLS, be like, yo, I think you should take this guy. They're not gonna second guess.
Nobody's saying no, right?
Yeah. So that's why I was kind of hoping Bobby got an MLS deal, because that could probably open doors for a lot of other Canadians as well, because he's very in tune with the Canadian landscape and Canadian players. Like, he's one person, especially in the bubble when we were in Winnipeg for a month.
Yeah,
it was me. Hold on, sorry.
That's okay. A little technical glitch there, everybody.
Yeah. It was me. It was me and it was me. Yeah, me, Tristan Henry.
Yep.
I told my mom that I'm on a call.
Even putting the family on hold for now, I know this is a special time.
Yeah, like it was me, Tristan Henry, Chris Nanko, Johnny Grant, Tristan Borges. Like, we were just picking Bobby's brain literally about everything that has to do with Canadian soccer, European soccer. And this is when the Euros were on, too, as well. So it was the summer 2021. And we were just picking his brain. And like, this guy has an answer for everything.
Wow. So, like,
when I was surprised he didn't get the Montreal job. And I think that if he did get it, it would have been me, selfishly, I would have been like, I would have wanted to go to Montreal. But, yeah, it would have opened a lot of doors for Canadians in general.
That's
coaches as well.
That's interesting you say that, because I think that's – we all hope, like, obviously as Forge fans, we want Bobby to be here forever, but we also recognize that the man's – he's an encyclopedia of knowledge and he knows the game, right? So eventually he's going to move on to somewhere higher. So that would be great for players in the CPL because he knows them and now he'd be a voice for them. And I think we saw that a little bit – we kind of hoped that with Pamadou Ka when he went to the USL, he went into down to Texas, right?
Yeah.
And we
I played against him.
Did you?
Times. Yeah.
So
we whooped them boys.
Good. So what is that? Do you think as coaches start to trickle in there, because it almost looks like they have to prove themselves too, the same way that you guys do. Do you think it's just a matter of time before those coaches start making names for themselves there, and then that opens the door? Is that one of the ways that Canadians get the floodgates kicked open for them a little bit more, do you think? Or do you think it'll be the league itself growing over time?
Honestly, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell, like, guys, Bobby could stay at Forge. If he really wanted to, he could stay at Forge forever.
Right.
Tommy Wielden could stay at Calgary forever. Those are, like, two coaches that I know, I feel like, regardless of whatever happens, because they've built what they built from the ground up, like, and they've always done well. Unless they finish in last place, and even then, they probably have to finish in last place, like, three years in a row.
Right,
you
know they're going to get a couple of grace periods.
Yeah, right? Like, they have to really tank. But till then, I don't think those guys are ever going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be on their own accord. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because they've kind of got things on their own terms right now, right? They're running something. They started it from scratch. It's everything's being what they've built and their connections. So what, I mean, obviously the money and going things to other leagues or something, but that level of power and control over your team.
And if you're producing too, right? Like
you're
saying, yo, you're telling the owners to give you this much control. Owners are taking a risk, but you won 3 out of 4 finals. So it's like, damn, I'm not going to change anything because he's doing the right thing.
Right.
So it's like, unless he just miraculously just fucking tanks for the next 5 years, then it's going to be like, all right, yo, Bobby, what are you doing? But at the same time, like, it's the other way around too. And like, a lot of people need it. They forget, like, Pomadou Ka's not Canadian.
Right. He coached in our league. He played
for the he's Canadian not, and he played for Vancouver for a couple of years, but he's not Canadian. He doesn't owe us anything.
Right. No, of course. Yeah.
He coached what, 1 year?
Right.
Yeah. So he doesn't really owe Canadians anything. He knows Canadian players because he played at Vancouver and he coached at Pacific. But good for him. When he got his opportunity, he got out of there as quickly as possible. I don't know. A lot of people have close relationships with him. I don't know if he's vouching for any other Canadian players, but like that would help. I mean,
that's a great point you make, though. Like, he could vouch for players, but you're right, it's a different animal than Bobby, somebody who's come up through and he's been ever in the Canadian system, in our ecosystem. He knows everything, everybody, and he's been, you know, bringing these guys up from
Yale. Like, Bobby's developed some of the best players that Canada's ever seen, so it's like, you will take his word for it. Then Pomadou was there in Canada for, let's say, 5 years.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, Bobby started a whole academy with his brother. So it's a whole different ballgame. But I think, like, coaches, the one thing that Paul could understand, we can relate to, because he's been there. So, like, if you know that, like, there's these kids that can play at the next level and it's not about talent, it's just about exposure. And I think we should push them through. Why not?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting, and I think it's exciting for the CPL right now because the new coach that's Gaysor, that's starting in Halifax, who was
Vaughn.
Yeah, with the Vaughn, former Vaughn guy, right? Again, that's the same thing. Guys from knowing a hotbed of Canadian talent. He's got all those connections, and now he's moved up a level. So hopefully, we move on and keep.
I don't know if anybody knows that Vaughn and Sigma is like the biggest rivalry probably since. Yeah, since 2010.
give me some insights on this one, because I've been talking with another podcaster from the East Coast. We're pretty friendly, and I want to give him some of the gears on this stuff. So how big is that rivalry between those
two? Rivalry. I mean, I remember in high school 1 year we were probably in 11th grade, and we used to play Vaughn every weekend in a friendly.
Wow!
Like, there was a period of 5 months where we played them every single weekend.
So you guys know each other inside and out.
Yeah, like, but these are the same guys that, like, after the game, we would go out and hang with them. Some of us, some of them went to the same schools. Some of us played, like, youth soccer together when we were kids.
Right.
And, like, but when we were on the field, it was like a bloodbath. So it was hilarious because till this day, we still talk about it. And we're like, yo, you guys, we talk smack. Like, you guys would beat us, and then one weekend we'll beat them. Bobby changing the whole lineup, like, yeah, we just played these guys. But it was fun because it was always going to be a good game,
right? So, and now down that road, there you go again, there's that brotherhood, that connection from teams that were very rival teams, but you don't know where you're going to end up in the future, right? Once you're professional, and all these guys now have connections and links to each other, right?
Yeah. Patrice is definitely going to have Halifax playing really attractive brand of football. I think their fans are going to be even more hyped now. And he's gonna bring his guys, the guys that he knows and he trusts, and he's gonna have them working.
That's exciting. Yeah. That's exciting to hear. All right, one last thing that I want to get in before, because I try to keep these kind of short, but you definitely sound like a 2 or 3 parter, so I'm gonna be hitting you up for another
show. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. No worries.
Perfect. But one thing I wanted to talk to you, going back, all the things you played, we talked about, you know, your pro career, we talked about college and coming up through Sigma. One thing that I didn't really, I don't think I recognized how close you were to national team success when Zambrano was the head man. You played for the under-23s, you got called up to the under-23s, and you actually got called up to the summer team, the senior team, sorry, before a Gold Cup, right? To the preliminary.
Yeah.
So how close was that path, and what was that like being on the cusp of international play?
It's actually really funny because I remember when I got called up to U-23, I wasn't supposed to get called up. My best friend, my best friend Richie was supposed to get called up, And he denied it. Like, he said he didn't want to go. He wanted to play with Orlando. So then they called me. Because he was playing at that time. Orlando had the Orlando City B in the USL. So he was playing me. At that time for with New York City FC, we went to Qatar. And that was like in March. So I just got signed. I was a month in. And he already had a whole year of professional experience.
Right.
So I was a month in, and I haven't played any games yet. Right. But I was just, you know what I mean? I was training. And then Patrick was like, yeah, just go. And then, like, when you get the film, send it to me, and I'll watch the games and snap. My first game with the U23s, Zambrano, the men's team played against Scotland.
Yep. Yes. Okay.
They played against Scotland. Then he flew to Qatar right after to watch us. He was like, I want the, like, all teams to be more connected, so we have a fluid playing system throughout the whole squad, throughout all from youth up. And then I think that's when Canada really started taking a turn, because he started calling guys that were like the talented guys,
right?
Not the guys that were like easily marketable or the guys that knew the coaching staff. Like, he called the guys that were really like good players, like the Raheem Edwards, like me. Then he started calling Petrasso. Alfonso's first cap was with Zambrano.
Was with Zambrano, right? So he was he was looking at maybe some places that weren't traditionally looked
at. Yeah, like he was looking at. So we go to the national team camp in Qatar. My first game, I started. Guess where I started? I played right back.
You played right back.
Back as a lefty. First game ever, Canada team. And I balled out. And he was like, because he had to write down your position, because he didn't know everybody. So he was like, okay, your name, your two preferred positions. So I put down my positions that I played in New York.
Right.
And he was like, we have a lot of midfielders right now. So, like, he's like, I know you're a left back, but they wanted to put Mark Anthony Kay as a left back.
Okay.
But yeah. So Mark Anthony Kay was playing left wing back at Louisville City.
Right.
And I was playing center mid at NYCFC. And you see how things switch. Now I'm a left back. He's a center mid.
And he's moved up.
Yeah.
You so he was playing left
back. Yeah, he was playing left back, and I was playing right back that game. And he was like, I know you're left-footed. I want you to start. Because in training, I was doing well. And he was like, have you ever played right back? I said, nah. I'm like, but I can't. I'm not going to complain. I was like, I'll play wherever you want.
Get me on the pitch, right?
Yeah. And we ended up beating Kazakhstan 2-0. Yeah, I played, 60 minutes that game. With a couple guys who were in the CPL, Manu Aparicio, Michael Petrasso was there. Kevin Alaman was there. Amir Didic was there. Who else was there? Mark Anthony was there. Raheem wasn't there. Who else was there? Trying to think.
This is amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? This is where we're going to have to, unfortunately, wind up for
part one
of our series with Kwame Awuah, because this was too much fun. So, I just want to say how much I appreciate you coming out for the first time. But we're definitely going to have you back. Are you down with that?
100%. You let me know, man. You let me know.
You know what? I'll keep chasing you. I know you're a pretty busy dude. Everything is
tomorrow night, I'm busy, but Wednesday should be fine.
Yeah, all right. We'll be in talks. I got a couple other guys from the team, hopefully lined up. But I really want to get back and finish part two of this with you. So
right, sounds good. I'll talk faster next time. No worries.
No. Keep it just like this. I'll just keep the episodes coming. I'll just keep that.
All right, sounds
I'm gonna good. Have to change the name to Hammer of Sparks and Kwame.
All right. Say no more. This is you, yo. You got it. Yo. Appreciate everything, though. I appreciate what you're doing, man.
Thank you so much. And thanks for making this. I know our fans are dying to hear from you. And this is going to be exciting. We'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, bro.
Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate you, too.
Okay. That was fun. And Kwame will be back. So thank you very much, Kwame, for being on the show. He's not afraid to let you peek behind the curtain. And as a fan, what could be better than that? So long from the Hammer of Sparks pod. Talk to you soon.